Hi, I'm Kevin Riley. I was the president of NBC Entertainment through the entire first chapter of the American version of The Office.
Hello, peeps. Welcome. We're at it again. This is The Office Deep Dive, and I am your host, Brian Baumgartner. Today, you will be listening to my interview with Kevin Riley. Who's Kevin Riley? Why are you interviewing him? I don't even remember his name from the credits. Well, that's true. Kevin Riley was not in the credits for the show because Kevin Riley was even more powerful than that. Kevin Riley was the NBC executive that was responsible for bringing The Office to the air. If it were not for Kevin Riley, The Office would have been canceled after 6 episodes. Kevin staked his reputation on our show, and he fought for us every step of the way. And by the way, Kevin is responsible for shows, not just The Office. Kevin was a network executive behind such shows as Saved by the Bell, ER, Law and Freaking Order, The Shield, Nip Tuck, Rescue Me. Then after The Office, he went on to develop shows like 30 Rock, Friday Night Lights, Glee, New Girl, Bob's Burgers, The Mindy Project. I'm going to stop. But my point is, we all owe Kevin a gigantic thank you for giving us not just The Office, but also like 90% of our favorite TV shows. So on that note, I present to you the man behind the curtain, Kevin Riley.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
Hey, buddy.
How are you?
I'm great. Great to see you.
How's everything?
It's been so long.
Are you putting this whole thing together?
I'm putting this whole thing together.
I did not know that.
I know.
Fantastic.
Yes.
I love it. I just didn't connect because Ben caught me in between meetings and he said about the podcast and I realized, and then I love that you're doing it.
Oh,
it's
great.
Actually perfect.
Yeah.
By the way, I never even connected to this moment. You also have like a great podcast voice too.
Thank
have you,
you
done voiceover over the years?
I've done more recently. You can get in there and do what you need to.
Oh yeah, whatever you gotta do some.
No, you're fine.
You gotta do some.
I've been told this a while. And it's my cadence mostly of my real voice is that I sound like Tom Hanks. So there's a
thing. It is actually true.
No, I know.
Now that you say it.
Yes.
It is the
case. So I have that. Yeah. Ben describes it as a smoky, potentially whiskey-laden version of Tom Hanks's voice. But I'll take it, whatever. It's been amazing. I mean, so much that I have learned.
Yeah.
And you, obviously, so important, and especially these early years. So I want to take you back. So you join FX in 2000,
mm-hmm.
and you're there through 2003.
Very active years. Yeah.
Right.
In this actual building, which is crazy coming in.
In this building?
Walking in, yeah. This building was a sort of Fox outpost. It was the New World Television building. It was really a crappy building.
Yes.
In fact,
it hasn't been really improved that much.
They put a little veneer on it. But at the time, I mean, my rug, I had left these beautiful offices in my previous job. My rug had a giant stain in the middle.
Oh.
There was literally a hole in the wall in my office. And I said to the office manager, she said, "Hey, anything we can do, whatever you need, just let me know and we'll get it for you." And I said, "You think I can get 2 chairs that match?" And she said, "No, I'm sorry, we can't do that." That's where it was. But then things really took off.
And then the stain stays.
The
stain stays. Yeah. So Ben was telling me that you had, Nick Grad was your development executive.
He was.
And he apparently was a big fan of the mm-hmm. British version of The Office.
Yeah.
And now, when did you become aware of the British version of The Office?
I had heard of it. But Nick has always had a good nose for sort of what's next. He was the guy I always looked to like, is this song cool? Yeah. Okay, great. I think it's cool too, you know?
Right.
And so it was one of those.
Okay.
Where I had kind of heard about it. I was like, yeah, I think this thing is something. And he came, I've seen it. I've been talking to Ben. We can get it. And it's we got to have it.
And now, did you meet with Ben while you were at FX?
No, we never did.
Okay.
Really, what it was is I was in the middle of that transition where it was 3 magical years at FX with a lot of things happening. This is on the heels of winning all the awards with The Shield and Nip Tuck and Rescue Me was being cast and Russo's first project, Lucky, was here. And it was just a lot happening. And this would have tucked right in. So it was a perfect FX show. But my contract was up. I was in the middle of a lot of negotiations, and it looked like I'm going back to NBC at this point. And that's when I start talking to Ben, because I'm like, you know, look, I'm not maybe not staying, but if I go, I'd like to take this with me out the door. Right. And, you know, wisely, I think Ben smelled the opportunity. Would have made a great FX show, but just from a value perspective, I think he was like, well, that's better.
That's better.
So we kind of then went quiet on it and just sort of sat on it.
Okay. So then he started meeting with you once you had gone to NBC.
Yeah. We had kind of wink-winked, like, I'll see you over there.
Okay.
But at that point, then it picked up momentum. I was going. That happened pretty quick. And we agreed to take it over to NBC.
And you made a deal there.
Yeah.
So you pick up the pilot. Now you've got to find somebody to run it. And you start meeting with showrunners to run it.
Yeah.
What were your initial instincts about Greg?
Well, Greg, he certainly, from the get-go, had my respect. I mean, he's known as a very thorough, for a couple of things. Number one, all those years on King of the Hill.
Yes.
Which was a show I loved. And I know Greg, from everybody I knew and respected, said Greg was the real deal. And then secondly, Conan, who I now subsequently have gotten, known for decades at this point, but I knew that they had come up together and were both close college friends and had comedy background together. And so I don't think we really ever, that wasn't really ever a sell for me.
Okay. Yeah. I wondered if because he hadn't come from, live action scripted, if there was any concern about that, or you just met with him and you knew, as most people do who meet Greg, that,
Yeah. It's just that quiet confidence, where, when he says things like, same show with 10% hope, you're like, okay, I think we're good to go here.
Right. That that nutty professor, but a genius.
Yeah. I mean, but early on when you're trying to have this give and take conversation, Greg is a man of few words and sometimes, kind of just sort of drifts off. And you're kind of left hanging there and you're going, okay. Oh. So early on, it took me a while to get the rhythm of, he's not a guy where you're kind of, hitting it back over the net with some topspin on it.
Right.
Like, I think Greg got that.
Right. How involved were you specifically? Obviously, you had final say, but in the casting, how involved were you in choosing the people?
Well, the casting is something you ultimately have approval over at the network because it's really everything at the end of the day. I mean, you got to get the script right, but the script right with the wrong casting, you're dead, especially in comedy. And this was in some ways, a fantasy casting process because first of all, we were out of cycle. Yes. So we didn't have to do this in the shotgun old pilot season, lock and load, you've got 5 minutes to cast it. We had months and months to do it. And I have to say, I don't know how many they went through. I was never privy to how many came in, but all I know is, the trickiest one obviously was Michael and it came down to Bob Odenkirk. And who was the guy that we ended up casting again? What was his name?
Corelli?
Yeah. How'd that work out?
Okay.
So, and I'd known Bob back from the Mr. Show days, my former company, Brillstein Entertainment, we produced Mr. Show. And, I thought Bob was a major talent. And by the way, I had a great take on the character, a different one.
Right.
So my involvement is I saw every audition for every character and they were just fantastic. Sometimes this process can be really a struggle,
Right.
Someone brings it in and they go, we found the guy. And you look at it and you go, is this the guy you're talking about?
Did I get the wrong tape?
All right, boy, I am just not seeing it. We had none of those. I mean, every time I was like, well, that's the guy. And then Jenna came in, oh my God, that's her. And it was just right from the get-go, I think everybody just made decisions on how to nudge it in their own direction. And it was a blast. And then guys like you, who were just coming out of nowhere. It's like, where'd this guy come from? This is fantastic.
Right. how on board were you with the idea of total unknowns? I mean, Steve had, you know, had Bruce Almighty.
I had no, well, he, look, Steve, I had done multiple busted pilots with Steve and okay. several bad series that he had co-starred in or been in. He was always funny. And this goes back to the Dana Carvey show with he right. and Colbert. And yes. I mean, it was a, it's got its own little weird cult following. There was like a Netflix special about it. And at that time, it was like, wow, that guy Carell is funny. And he was always good, but it was always good in a bad thing, you know, or something that was okay, but didn't take off. Actually, during the casting process, when we were considering Steve, Stacy Snyder called me up, who was running Universal Pictures at the time. And that was our sister company, the feature side. He was doing 40-Year-Old Virgin. And she said, I'm going to send you some dailies. You should see them. And I was like, wow. This is a whole nother gear for this guy. And I don't want to say that was what sealed the deal. Because by the way, at that point, who knows
right.
what that movie is going
right.
to do.
Right.
It's not like, oh, he's already a star. We'll just plug him in.
Right.
And then it was just one of those kismet kind of things where it was just the right move.
Okay, so you meet Greg, all these cast members, it gets picked up to a pilot. How was that received at NBC?
Well, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't shown widely. David Kissinger was running the studio at the time, was also really an advocate and passionate for this, and he was a co-conspirator with me. But it was delivered it to me, and I would just say it was very slow.
Yes.
I was like, okay, I can see the show in there, but man, we are defying people's patience here. Like editorially, it needed a lot of sculpting.
Okay.
You could see the comedy, you could see the characters. That was not a concern. Those are one of the biggies is, oh no, we've got wrong people or this guy's not delivering. She's terrible. No, that was not the issue. What was working, but you know, the narrative was sort of going and I will say one of the biggest things I had to work with Greg on was just look in network television, you had to get through act breaks. You had to go sell toothpaste in the middle. And so I'd say like, you know, Greg, we just sort of trail off here on these act breaks and,
right.
you know, we lose the narrative thread and that's kind of fun, but you know, we gotta sculpt this. I think Greg went back and this is really, I think where we forged our relationship because it could have been brutal, and at least I thought it was a creatively fun thing. I think he did 14 cuts of the pilot.
Right.
It may have been 16. You'd have to ask Greg, but right. it was double digits. And really, really, and that's where I saw really his true gift, that he could find it, and he knew where it was, and he could hunt for it. And every one, it was just sharper and sharper and sharper, and I could just see it.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. And so they deliver that.
Now we had time again. Had this been done in pilot season?
Oh, right.
These are the vagaries of the whole thing. Had this been done, even with my support and love, had we had only the time, had this been the usual way pilot season was down, you shot in sometime April, you had a sometimes days to edit, if not weeks, because you had to go deliver it and test it and do this thing and then boom, and then screen it. You know, sometimes right. many of these pilots are screened off of two cuts. If we had done that, dead.
Dead.
Just dead. Again, I loved it and I was like, wow, this needs work. And we had time to do the work. So now we were sitting. The other part when you were playing the system was you didn't want to be in too early. You want to hit a sweet spot when they're dying to see something new and maybe you've got a shot just psychically, oh, here's something we could be the next thing. And you kind of get in there and you don't want to be the leading edge. You don't want to be the last one. And this thing just sat and sat and sat and sat. And as it got exposed through the system, let's just say the system wasn't overly responsive.
Right. You know, kind
yeah.
to the,
yeah. Yes. I mean, look, the network at that point had, you know, I had started my career at NBC. I was there for six of the great years coming up. The heyday of NBC, the great, great things. Brandon Tartikoff ran the network. I remember looking at his office and at some point it dawned on me, I wonder if I could ever have that job. And now I came back and got his job and
right.
I was sitting in his office. And literally, you know, I closed the door and I had a moment and I looked up and I felt so great and about and just amazing. I'm sitting literally at Brandon's desk looking at the monitors on the wall. And then I had this sinking feeling that I made a horrible, horrible mistake, which it was, because the wheels were coming off.
Right.
The momentum had turned. I came in telling everybody we need a new breath of fresh air and this place is in trouble. And after decades of winning, a lot of the ethos inside the building was, we know what we're doing.
Right.
And it was a little like, who is this guy? And I also didn't learn the concept of corporate buy-in. You know, when you come into a company, really anywhere, you know, it's not no different on a team. You know, if a coach takes over a team, you got to win over people's confidence. Like, all right, we'll follow you. We'll listen. You can't just come in. Now, once people are bottomed out and are desperate, you got a shot.
Right.
But until that happens. And so I came in thinking things like the office, like this is exactly what we need to do. And just a lot of people were like, no, no, we need the next version of that sexy single girl in New York who's lives with some friends. And you're like, no, no, we really don't. There was still this sort of thing that lived on in the building post Friends of, you know, no, no, we want funny, but they're going to be sexy too, right? I mean, we need that. And that had just made its way into comedy, which was never part of comedy, you know?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Comedy was like funny, period. And so that was still a little bit in the wind of like, wait a minute, this is a group of misfits.
Right.
So this kind of just seemed like the opposite of at least what everyone thought we needed.
Right. Well, it's so fascinating. The idea of, we had this opportunity. We were handed this jewel,
yeah,
this great idea, this show from London, and everybody just kind of wanted to do the best that we could,
right,
to do something different, which, yeah, is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're up against this old guard and people who had done it in a certain way.
Yeah.
And Greg was saying, no, we're going to have writers. We're, yeah, going to have writers act in the show.
Right.
No, we're going to, yeah, not have a wall that we can move because, yeah, we're a documentary, right?
Yes.
And,
right,
we're going to hire actors that are not, that are me unknown.
Even the stupid debates over the I had to listen to opinions of people saying, you know, Americans associate documentaries with heaviness and non-commercial. It's just an obstructive format to most Americans. And you're doing a comedy through that format by its nature. And I'm just listening, oh my God, really? And some of these people, they were professionals, but I'm just sitting there going, what do you know and what the F are you talking about?
Right. But how confident were you that it could translate to a broadcast audience? Because, yeah, at the time, single camera, mock, mm-hmm, documentary, yeah, no laugh track, yeah, nothing like that was on network television.
Yeah. What I felt all along from minute one is an office comedy is a staple of television. So yeah, the form is different. The tone is certainly different. The lead's attitude is really different. But at the end of the day, you're not going to look at these going, I don't understand. What is it? They're in an office. And I always clung to that all the way through. But that it's just one of the things I just loved about it. I love the outpost in the middle of nowhere. I love the boss who's in this island who is free to just run roughshod over everybody. And Jim, I can't remember the exact line, maybe you do in the pilot, you know, where they say, you know, describe what you do. And he's like, well, what's paper products and processing? And we move the skids and do thing. And I'm boring myself.
As right,
I'm
right.
Is that for me embodied the whole show?
Right.
You know, like we don't actually even know why we come to work or what we really accomplish every day.
Right, right. So I was told it was the worst testing show in the history of NBC.
I don't know if it was the worst testing, but okay, it was bad.
The worst testing that maybe made it?
Yeah.
made it a season?
It was certainly in that pack. I mean, of the ones that made it, it was really down there.
Right. So what was the idea behind giving 5 more episodes? Like, did you have to fight to get those 5?
Yeah. First of all, at this point, 2 things happened through the course of the show for me, and I'll give you just the first part. At this point, I'm thinking, I really think the rebuild of NBC is going to happen, and this is going to be one of those pieces. And I looked at the rest of the plate of stuff we had, which was shit. And so it's not like I go, wow, I got 10 other great things. I just said, look, this is going to be a slog, but this is good. This is just good, and we're going to start with greatness. And first of all, I have noted this before, but for the way the stupid pilot screening process used to work at these broadcast networks was everybody would fly out, and the East Coast guys and the heads of sports and the heads of affiliate relations and sales and research and all the middle-aged white guys would fly out and sit in a room and, you know, tell stories. And then you'd rotate around and screen all the pilots, and people would rank them and put numbers on them. And then you'd come in and debate and decide. And you'd have to kind of hear all of that. Now, when things are going well and you have a hot hand of the present entertainment, you go through that process, but they are either not pushing back on you, or you have the ability to go, well, that's great, Brian, thanks. Thanks for that. That's fantastic input. And then just go ignore it.
Right.
But when the network starts to get on wobbly legs, and I had not, again, established credibility, people knew me, they liked me, they recruited me for the job. But at this point, I seem to be now advocating for things that don't look like what they're supposed to look like.
Right.
And this is identified as a problem early on. And so that gave other players more power to come up and say, let me tell you why this isn't going to work. And then they had the research. Now, so we come out of this pilot screening process, and every room is giving it, you know, 10 is the best, 0, we're going to give it a 0.5, you know, or 1, you know. Well, nobody likes it except one room. I go down, and honestly, it was the only room I was interested in. The room filled with the assistants and the associates and all the young people.
Right.
And that was the biggest room, actually. There were like 40 people in there. And I go in and I say, what do you guys think? And I remember the takeaway is this. Not only is this the best thing we've done, it's the only thing we would watch that you're making. And it's kind of the only thing we'd watch of what's currently on the air. And I was like, thank you very much. That's all I need to know.
Wow.
And, yeah. And like unequivocally, that room was, we are in. Even with the first pilot, it still hadn't.
Right.
It hadn't even become the show it was. They were it. And I knew it was going to be the young audience that we were going to cling to. But that meant nothing still in selling it. It still wasn't.
Right.
The 5 episodes order, and also Greg, look, Greg had made some money on King of the Hill. So he was willing, if he had fought and said, I want to, he cut his rate. He was willing to take the shorter order. He could have stood on principle and said, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing 6. And, you know, I'm on 100 cents on the dollar. And then it would have been dead. But he loved it, and he was willing to take the short. And that's really basically all I could cobble out was that initial 6-episode mid-season order.
Right. I love that story. And a side note, I'm sure you don't know this, but like on the set, mm-hmm. I was kind of the business the business of television really interested me. So we aired on Thursday nights or whatever, and we would be in the makeup trailer, and I would be going through the numbers and giving perspective as to why the numbers might be where they are, how they related the night before. But March Madness is on right now. Yeah. So it's going to be like, that was what interested me. So,
well, there certainly wasn't a lot of good news in those numbers. That was the thing.
Early on, no.
Those first 6 episodes, first of all, the network had very little momentum. You know, if this were still the days where we had big shows, we could have parked it in between. It might have been protected. But at this point in mid-season, the network kind of went from bad to worse during the year.
Right.
We were beginning to just grind down. By March is like people have kind of established what they're liking and not liking, and we bring the show on, and it premiered. There were reviewers that liked it that I clinged to. I will say Bill Carter from the New York Times from minute one. Bill Carter said, "This is the best show I've seen in years, and I love it, and I'm in." And he was a huge advocate for it.
Do you think that there was any impact? So after the initial 6 that were given originally.
Yeah.
Now the ratings were better that second year. We had My Name is Earl.
Yes. That show ended up because that show came out hot. We tucked it in behind. I remember, and it was around Christmas time. I literally was like a Christmas gift to me we had done the deal with Apple, if you remember,
yes.
Early on, the early
yes.
iPhone ads or iTunes ads, rather, featured it in the stores. And then Steve had the movie had hit. So I'm saying, wait a minute, we're getting a little, Steve's now becoming a thing. And look at that, iTunes is going to be a thing. And
right.
they like us. And we're starting to get little pockets of support and people are starting to talk about it. And I remember waking up, and at this point I'm really beginning to be on the ropes. And I wake up one morning in like going into the holidays.
Yeah.
And the show actually grew. It actually grew. It stabilized. It was a respectable rating.
Right.
And I honestly think I don't admit it, but I might have teared up. I mean, I really might have teared up.
Right. Well, we were certainly at the time. I mean, when we, it was sort of like this confluence of events, as you said, with 40-year-old Virgin. Suddenly there's Apple stores and our pictures are on these new things called, you know, the iPod video. And we're suddenly the number one show on iTunes. I feel like from the beginning, you had the foresight that, you know, the way that, that ratings happen with the Nielsen boxes, they're looking at households.
Yes.
No one's looking at colleges.
Yeah.
No one's looking at dorms and college students.
There was the larger thing of what I felt culturally is, it was the canary in the coal mine for where we are today. Look, there's always been a generational turning of the page where, you know, the young people are want the next thing. I could see that happening with just the sensibility. But then something that really the powers that be were passing by is the platform itself, the viewing experience itself. It ended up being a really smart thing. Like, you know what? Let's get out in front with this thing that seems to be where it's headed. And that's where young people wanted to see it.
Well, also that you put it on MySpace the week before it premiered. Like, you were already using—
Exactly. Whatever platform we could get it out on and just— or, you know, either legally or illegally. I don't even know where it was getting passed around.
Right.
But it was clear something was happening.
Right. So you talk about iTunes, you know, the video iPod on this Christmas episode, and it's the first one that goes over 10 million. There was something else that happened during this time, the webisodes.
Yes. Right?
The original online content on NBC.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, these were early days of, you know, this webisode thing was starting to bubble up and some shows were doing them, mostly really pretty lame, to be honest. But then ours actually weren't lame.
Right. We did the Accountants, which was Oscar and Angela and I.
And they were becoming a thing.
And ended up winning an Emmy.
Yeah. That was another amazing thing. And so that this kind of content wasn't crappy ancillary thing. In fact, Greg would have now never allowed it to happen because he just wouldn't endorse that. But the fact that you're like, wow, these things are really good and people love these and it's becoming a way to stay attached to that. And nobody could have really predicted the changes that ultimately came. The weird thing for me, having been at NBC and go back, in my heart of hearts, I still believed, and it is, you know, NBC, I mean, network television, the year I started in it, came out here to get into show business, 1988. If you go back, it was the first year that the Wall Street analysts were beginning to declare network television a dinosaur. So its death had been premiered for, you know, because cable was statistically on the rise. Now, obviously, decades and decades and decades of billions of dollars and tremendous cultural impact was created. So I still believed that this platform of NBC, which it did, was still a great place to nurture incredible television. With that said, I think the powers that were there still were believing that it was just one show away from coming back. And in my heart, I said, guys, it's never coming back. That was the thing that I knew. It is never going to be what it was. And you have to find what that new thing is. And this show is built for that. Whatever that new thing is, this show is built for that. But even the tone, the scrappy kind of like bleak looking docu tone allowed you to then make a webisode out of it. Some shows you in a webisode, you're like, well, that's not the drama I watch. And that's webisode. That's a really cheap, bad version. Well, this just felt very organic to like, well, we make it the same way we make the show.
Right.
And that felt very viral and very, you know, of the web. And again, we were just fumbling our way through, but you got the young audience that just knew it and caught on. And so that's why it thrived. And that's why ultimately the culture and the landscape has caught up for this thing to then just have this next surge of life.
Right. So you were talking about, I'm going to show you a picture from August, September of 2006.
Yeah, I have that picture in my office. Yeah.
And it's a picture of Kevin being picked up by Rain and John.
Yeah.
And the look on your face and us winning the Primetime Emmy for Best Comedy.
Oh my God. And what a night, huh?
And what a night.
Yeah.
And just your courage to have stuck with the show and getting recognized now for that must have been pretty special.
Amazing. You know, that expression on my face is for me, because I did ultimately get fired. So it didn't save my job.
Right.
But I will say that it, you know, I got into this business. All I ever wanted to do as a kid, I had no idea what it was. I didn't even know how to get in. I didn't even know what I wanted to do. But those are the kind of moments that are rare where you're going, we're doing good work with good people and they're all doing it for the right reasons. And, you know, like defying the odds and then having that moment of recognition with people who are also then so gracious. Look, I've worked with really talented people. Some people are really talented. They're not so gracious.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And this was just a really special thing. You know, the tricky thing about show business is a lot of times, you know, you don't want to meet your heroes because what goes on behind the cameras is not really what you pictured that group of people to be. In this case, I think it really was. You know, I mean, for the most part, I have to say, like,
100%.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the love and respect that everyone who I talk to who comes into this room for you and your fight to keep it on the air. And we all believe being responsible for us having done over 200 episodes. That's a legacy, I think, that, well.
Well, it's, you know, life is full of ironies, you know, and I was always proud of it. It did go on to stay on the air, but NBC then, you know, they had then invited me to no longer do that job. And, you know, there were a crop of shows I put on that I was proud of. You know, the 30 Rocks and Friday Night Lights were on there. We had a crop of good shows that kind of for the next 10 years, you know, that's the thing about The Office. You know, the show that they, you know, was going to be a real problem was one of the only things that endured,
right,
that was worth hanging on to through that really brutal time for that organization.
Right.
And everyone kind of felt like, wow, great run, great show, let's move on. And then you get this crazy moment in time where that canary in the coal mine really happened, which is the show that was ahead of its time with the young people who said, that's the only thing we're going to watch. Now there's a new platform called subscription video on demand.
Right.
And it finds its way to that platform. And those people are now in their 40s, and there's new people coming up discovering it for the first time. And this thing has this crazy bounce.
It's way bigger now.
Oh, yeah.
Than it was at any point on the show. And I don't know if you've heard this figure. Something like 52.3 billion, with a B, minutes streamed on Netflix alone. Yeah. In 2018.
Yeah.
And by pretty much any metric that I can figure out, the most watched show in television right now, and we haven't filmed in 5 to 6 years.
Finally won the title.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's finally it ended up in the place where it was kind of meant to be all along.
Kevin, thank you again.
What a blast, Brian. It's great to see you, man.
Oh, it's so good to see you.
And it's great sitting across from me. I could do 2 more hours.
Oh, well, thank you so much. All right, guys. Sadly, we have to say goodbye to Kevin because he has to get back to, I don't know, saving the next best show on television, probably. Now, I have to tell you this. I wanted to wait till the end. I had not seen Kevin Reilly in many, many years when he sat down with me to do this interview, and I wasn't sure how it was going to go, all right? I didn't know how willing he would be to talk about the show. But at the end, I could not have been happier and more touched by his openness, his generosity, and his willingness, truly, to go back to that time in his life. So thank you, Kevin, for taking the time and for being so thoughtful. I look forward to seeing you again very soon. To the rest of you, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. And we will, oh, I promise you this, we will be back next week. So come join me.
The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our producer is Adam Macias. Our associate producer is Emily Carr. And our assistant editor is Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend Creed Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.